Golf Smarter number 125 for May 6, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Former Technical Director of the USGA, Frank Thomas.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for pressing play to enter another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Hopefully, wherever you live, the golf season has either begun again or is in full swing. Either way, I know how valuable your time is and truly appreciate you choosing to spend it with us. Frank Thomas may be one of the best-kept secrets in golf. Whenever I ask anyone if they know who he is, the immediate response is, the baseball player? Ooh, swing and a miss, strike one. Well, we first met Frank Thomas when he appeared on the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast last year. Frank joined Kenny Nicholson and myself in a two-part conversation with Scotty Cameron talking about putting, putters, and putter technology. If you have not heard it, I highly recommend it. It was one of my all-time favorites. But Frank is much, much more than a putter designer. He spent 26 years as the technical director for the USGA, which means that any ball or club that was approved for play had to cross his desk for approval. He's responsible for the invention of the graphite shaft, the stimp meter, which measures the speed of the greens, and is an author. His latest book is called Just Hit It. I'm so happy that he's agreed to join us here today. Also, stay tuned because we have a new giveaway to announce later in the episode. Welcome, Frank.
Hello there, Fred. My pleasure to be with you.
Now, we're on a Skype interview. We're using Skype today, so if it does have some weird sound to it, we apologize. But this is a pretty good sound, and the topic is so good, and the content is so strong, I don't think that you'll have too much issue with the sound. But, Frank, you just have come out with a new book called Just Hit It, Our Equipment and Our Game. Can you please tell me, what was the motivation about behind writing this book?
Well, it's taken about 3 years to get the book written and published, and I think the motivation is to try and help golfers, to try and inform golfers as best I can about equipment, and so that they can enjoy the game more.
And you said it took 3 years. Does that mean from the time that you started writing it until the time it was published, were there a lot of changes that you witnessed then that you were like, oh, boy, we have to go back and rewrite this?
No, I don't think so. And we're self-publishing, so we aren't under any restraints by a publisher to say, you know, this book will sell a little bit better if you had a different chapter in there, or if you started off, or if you said this or said the next thing. So we were completely unrestrained. And it just sort of started falling into place gradually, and we had different subject matters. I didn't have to change very much at all, and I was very fortunate to have Jeff Newman, who's an absolute wordsmith, working with me, and a golf historian. So he was able to contribute little bits of history and things like that about the game. But whatever I wrote, he made it. Even if it was good, he made it sound great. So I think that the book it took some time to put it together, but I'm really happy with it, and very happy that we've been able to do what I intended to do and inform golfers as best I can about their equipment and understand equipment, understand some of the terms that are being used, and make it very easy for them, not cumbersome at all.
So I found it interesting that the way you started the book, and I did enjoy it very much, the way you started the book was with this mythical game and the history of this game called Obstac. Where did that come from, and why did you approach it that way?
I think I wanted to tell the story of how golf evolved from the beginning to the end without being criticized for having my history correct or incorrect, exactly the way it happened. But the concept is to try and understand how we started playing the game of golf, why we play the game of golf, how it's been influenced by commercialism, how the administrators of the golf came about, and why we did need any associations. And I felt it was better to tell it in a metaphor rather than trying to go through the history of it and let people understand. And I could say a lot more that way and still get the message across. And as I progressed through that particular chapter, getting to the end, making very close relationships with the game of golf, and the similarities are obviously there, and how we take you through and the understanding of the game and a little story that I think people can relate to.
Oh, absolutely. And I love the little background that you provided just now, because it changes the whole perspective on the story for me. Because I'm like, oh, wait a minute, is this trying to be accurate? If it's not, I'm not really sure. But now that I understand, it's like that way you didn't have to be too accurate, and you can enhance it in many ways. It adds a lot more to the story.
Yeah, I think the basics of the little metaphor are accurate. The way the golf associations have been formed, and we call them the OBSAC Association, and the Royal and Ancient Golf Club, which obviously relates directly to what we call ROC, the Royal OBSAC Club. And I think that the basics are very true, and that's how these organizations formed. And then I bring in how commercialism has had a beneficial and detrimental effect on the game, and how we need to get back to basics.
All right, now let's talk about reality here and the commercialism of the game. It's obviously has helped expand the audience base for golf, but is it enough? And what is the state of it?
Anytime there's an opportunity to make some money, people are going to take advantage of that and make it. And unfortunately, golf is such a wonderful activity, such an addictive activity, that people have now taken advantage of that to their own ends. And I'm concerned that when the money, making of money, is the prime reason for doing anything in the game of golf, that the golf actually suffers from that. On the other hand, there's no reason why you can't have individuals who are involved in golf and making money out of golf that really and truly understand what it's about. A very good example being the industry, the equipment industry. Almost everybody in the equipment industry actually plays the game of golf, understands the game of golf, but at the same time, they have a major conflict between their billfold and their heart, where they recognize that they don't want to spoil the game, but at the same time, they've got to report to their shareholders and need to make sure that the bottom line is there. On the other hand, the people who exploit the game, I think, are those who want to use the game of golf to sell homes. And I think once their homes are sold, they're not particularly interested in what happens to that particular facility or the people who belong. So that's the bad side. So commercialism has really helped, because I don't think if we hadn't had the financial incentive to get involved, the game would be where it is today.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you even gave a little perspective in there that I found fascinating, and we're talking about the addictive nature of the sport itself, in the fact that there's no defense in the game. And so you're not just playing up against, and this is the perspective that I gained from it, you're not just playing against an opponent where all you have to do is better your opponent. Your opponent is yourself. And so that you'll never be satisfied, because you're constantly trying to beat yourself, and you can always do better. Which I think that's where it comes, the addictive nature of it.
Well, no question. Fred, you know, when I get up onto my little philosophical soapbox about the game, I speak to people and say, you know, really, do you understand why you're playing this game of golf? And the individual says, yeah, of course I do. I mean, I'm outdoors, I'm getting some exercise, it's a beautiful environment, I'm with my buddies, I'm competing, and I'm just having a good time. And in fact, they really don't understand. It's like the mountain climber, when you say to the guy who's just come down from climbing a mountain, you say, why did you do that? And he said, well, because it was there. He doesn't say to you, well, I'm going through a process which is a subconscious evaluation process. We all have this sort of subconscious urge to evaluate ourselves. You do it every day. You're doing it. You don't even realize you're doing it. As an example, you'll maybe have a ball of paper that you roll up in your hand and in your office, and you want to throw it in the waste basket across the room, and you do. And it gets inside, and you get this little tingle down your back, you know, yes, I've got it in. And there's nobody there to say, well done, Fred, you know, and applaud. It's you and the piece of paper in the basket. And that is what, and you're evaluating yourself. And obviously, if the basket across the room was the size of a beer can, you wouldn't be able to get it in, and so you wouldn't even try. On the other hand, if the basket itself was 6 feet in diameter, you'd feel an idiot even trying to do it. And so you have to have the correct challenge, which is appropriate for your particular skills, but at the same time, you get that little tingle. And when you hit a good drive, and it goes exactly the way you want, or a good eight iron, or even a really good putt, and you know that you've done everything correctly, there's nothing more thrilling and more exciting about doing that. And on the other hand, you know, the opportunity for complete disaster is right at hand as well. So we have that particular contrast. And when we understand that the game of golf is basically a self-evaluation process, and you said it, it's a game between you and the golf course, and all of the other things that we think we're enjoying about the game of golf are wonderful byproducts. There's nothing wrong with going out in a wonderful environment and getting some exercise and even competing against your buddies. But those are not sufficient to support the game and make it as addictive as it is.
It's so true that disaster looms at every step, and we're so familiar with the agony of defeat in the sport that when you do have a moment of success, it can overshadow everything that's happened that whole day.
Absolutely. And there's nobody there that's moving the ball. Nobody hit it at you. You put it there, and many times you actually physically place the ball in position, and now you have to allow your physical and mental skills to come together to coordinate them and have control over yourself. And when you do exactly what you want to do, and you have the mental capacity to not interfere with what your body wants to do, and it comes right, I mean, there's nothing better.
Yeah. Amen. Amen to that. Now, golf on television, golf on the tour, very successful today, greater than ever. Maybe credit goes to one golfer. A lot of people would like to give one golfer a lot of credit for the success of the professional tour. But what about for amateurs? Is golf as successful today in terms of how it could be, or reaching its potential, for the amateur golfer, the non-competitive golfer?
Unfortunately not. And Tiger is very good for the game, as was Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. And I, you know, we're really lucky to have these individuals who have a goal, and it's not money anymore for Tiger. In many cases, you know, the financial gains, potential gains, are the incentive to get there to play pro golf. But unfortunately, you know, not everybody can make it. But he is now exhibiting a true love for the game and a challenge and a self-evaluation that he's going through himself. So it's wonderful. And unfortunately, or fortunately for us, we are exposed to that on a weekly basis, so we can see it all happening, and we all aspire to be like that. And we all fantasize that we possibly could have been like that, not quite as good as Tiger, but at least some of the guys out there could have been if we only had the time and practice. So that fantasy is wonderful, because it is through that we relate to these guys, and why it's so important to be playing by the same rules, etc. And I don't want to get into bifurcation of the rules right now, but that's one of the reasons why we should not have separate rules. But at the same time, looking at the average golfer, unfortunately, is not benefiting as much as he could and enjoying the game as much. We are losing golfers, and the number of rounds have decreased by approximately 3% per year for the last 7, 8, 9 years. And that's a shame, because I feel that we need to expose this wonderful game to various other people. However, unfortunately, there are a number of obstacles. Obstacles being slow play, faster play, and the intimidation factor, and not having the facilities on which to really challenge us for our particular skill level. 99% of the golf courses are designed for the scratch golfer, and they're only 0.65%, less than 1%, 0.65 or 1% of the golfers are scratch or better. And so we need to understand that golf courses were designed for the scratch golfer and then compromised for the rest of us. And just moving the tees forward, as an example, is not necessarily the way to do it. And we do not welcome new golfers into our sport the way we should. And therefore, you know, the introduction to the game is not as user-friendly as we could make it.
You had so many different comments that I'm taking notes on that I could have, that I want to go in different directions here. I'm trying to figure out okay, I'm going to go back to the Tiger part for just a moment. When it's all said and done, what do you think Tiger's legacy will be versus his obvious impact? But what do you think his legacy will end up being?
A driven person. He is so driven, and I think that he's chosen an activity which is good for mankind, because there's nothing in the game of golf that is bad, and I think he exhibits that, and I think his ability to focus and control and his mind is greater than anybody else in the history of the game of golf has been able to do. The great golfers in the past have been either arrogant or they've been, you know, just so full of themselves, and they had to be. You had to be able to get yourself into that zone. Tiger can put himself into that zone. And so I think he's going to be an individual that's going to break so many records and almost, unfortunately, almost out of reach of anybody else.
Absolutely. Now let's get back to the golf courses for a minute and how that it is designed for the best players out there and not for the rest of us. But the rest of us have egos as well and want to think that we can compete on that level. And so we try to play beyond our game. Is that a smart thing for us to be doing?
Probably one of the worst things that we could do for ourselves. Huh. Unfortunately, you're right. We have a big ego. The average golfer in the United States drives the ball 192 yards. He thinks he drives it 240 yards. That was based on surveys we did and a whole study that was being performed with thousands of bits of data. And I refer to that and make reference to that in the last chapter of the book, where we say, you know, we really got to get control over our own egos. Unfortunately, we're provided with five or six sets of tees on a number of golf courses, and inevitably we choose the wrong set. We go move to the back tees, or not quite all the way back, but very much further back than we need to go to really enjoy our game. The average golfer we've discovered that the average golfer would prefer to play a 6,200-yard golf course. And that's where a golf course that most of us should be playing, 65, maybe 6,800 yards if we start getting very good. But 7,200 yards is no good for us mortals. Yes, it is okay for the tour, but for the rest of us, we select the wrong set of tees. It takes too long to play them. We lose too many golf balls during the round. We come off the golf course not having enjoyed ourselves and asking this question, do we want to come back and play tomorrow? The answer is probably no. You need to come off the golf course wanting to play more holes. You want to go and play another nine. If that's the way you come off the golf course, then you know you are playing the correct set of tees. And unfortunately, our egos get in the way, and we always play, or not always, but a lot of us play from the wrong set of tees. And we should take a lesson from the Scots as an example, and the old course at St. Andrews. You don't have an option. You play from one set of tees, and that's it. And if you want to play from the back tees, the metal tees, you have to get very special permission, and very few people have granted it, and only if you can guarantee that you're going to play in less than 3.5 hours.
Wow.
So we need to learn a lesson, and we need to recognize that 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 we've got to get control over our egos, and also it's golf course set up, and the operators in the golf course have to open their eyes and say, guys, you know, if we can get more people playing faster, that they know they'll enjoy themselves a lot more. We can get a few more rounds in at this particular club for that day. Not only that, but they'll buy more beer.
And that's what the course operator wants to hear.
Yeah. Absolutely. See, the financial bottom line is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
For them.
Now, of course, we can't change the having 18 holes, but to get more people to play more often, should there be more nine-hole courses, or isn't nine holes even the wrong idea?
Well, I think that's where tradition has had a detrimental effect on the game. We all believe that 18 holes is what it should be. And in actual fact, 18 holes is not that old a tradition. But we have also, I believe, we need to speed up play. We need to make the game into loops of six holes. I'm recommending six-hole loops. So you can play 6, you can play 12, you can play 18, or you can play 27, whatever you want, and you should charge accordingly. Many golf courses today don't even have a 9-hole green fee. And as an example, so if you wanted to go out and play in the afternoon, starting off teeing off at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the summer, you only wanted to play 9 holes. Many golf courses don't even offer that. And so we need to look at 9-hole green fees. We need to, again, the golf course itself must be designed such that the tees that you select, if they can get you to select the correct set of tees, the second shots, you don't approach the green over hazards that were designed for the scratch golfer. So even the course design must be modified a little bit. And there are a number of golf course architects that are starting to think in this direction.
Yeah, I've even noticed that some architects are adding kids' tees. They're adding more tees, you know, so they can make it even shorter. So children, you can take your kids out to play with you and have some fun with them.
Absolutely, but the problem is shortening up on the tee is not necessarily the way to do it specifically. You've got to have a tee literally such that if you cannot score par on a hole with your two or three best shots, then you're playing from the wrong set of tees. So par should be an achievable score. It doesn't mean you can score par every time, obviously, but it should be achievable. And so you should be playing the golf course with from the tees that you can achieve or score par. Now, moving the tees right up forward so you're 150 yards away from the green may sound good, but if you have to, you're going to have a forced carryover, a hazard when you get there. The beginner golfer is going to be discouraged quite a bit. We need bunny slopes. We need some starter golf courses. We don't even have any starter golf courses. And from our research and some of the survey we did, we found out that one of the biggest problems in the game is time away from our family. Well, I don't believe that everybody wanted to play with their family, and I don't believe it's necessary to play with your family, but at least if your family played golf, they could relate to the game and could talk about it and over dinner if that's what they wanted to talk about that evening. But we need to develop bunny slopes for people. We need to make the introduction process more friendly. And people say, well, we don't have the opportunity to have a little par 3 golf course on our facility. We don't have the room. It's too costly. And standalone par 3s aren't going to make any money. So we'll be a little innovative and take your wonderful driving range that you've got and close it down for 2 days a week for 2 hours at certain times and turn it into a mini golf course so that beginning people don't have to be kids, but they could be anybody who's beginning. Go out and play that little mini golf course just so you get a feel for the game itself. You cannot learn to play golf on a driving range. That's where you learn to hit golf balls. You learn to play the game of golf by achieving the overall concept of what the game is about, by getting the ball onto the fairway and then hitting it onto a green and then sinking the putt. That is what golf's all about. And so we need to start recognizing that.
That's a great idea. As a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, we had a conversation with the director of golf, and I think it was the World Woods Golf Course out in Tampa area.
Right.
And their practice facility, they have, in addition to a driving range, they have a three-hole course that you can go and use that as your warm-up for your round.
Absolutely. And I think those are the sort of things that we really need to work on. And unfortunately, World Woods is a wonderful facility, and they've got a 360-degree driving range. You can drive all the way around it, and you can practice from any direction you want, into the wind, across wind, and they have a mini golf course within just on the driving range.
And this is World Woods, is that one you're speaking of?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is that we need to get everything organized. You can't just take one thing at a time. Everybody's got to get organized, so they've got to have special green fees. If somebody wanted to go there in the evening just to play the little par three, you need to have, you know, a $5 green fee for that, for an hour or so on the golf on your little mini golf course, so you can encourage people. And I think some of the other things, Fred, we got to look at are the golf cart. The golf cart really hasn't been helpful to the game at all. It's allowed us to design golf courses that have 200-300 yards between the green and the next tee, and to sell more houses, but it really hasn't helped the game. And unfortunately, and it has certainly been, and it's necessary for people who are unable to walk the golf course to use a golf cart to be able to enjoy the activity, because they're handicapped. But for the rest of us, you know, we're losing sight of what the game's about and the walking, and we may lose use of our legs if we don't watch out.
That's an absolutely fascinating topic. I personally prefer to walk a golf course, but I know that when I'm stuck in a course that only does golf carts, to me, you not only spend more time because you have to drive to each person's ball back and forth, and no one, at least at the level that I play at, no one's hitting the ball in the same place. But you lose the feel of the golf course. I remember a golf course much more when I've walked it than when I've driven through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that golf carts do have a place, but unfortunately they've dominated and they've had an effect on the course design. And also when you talk about not wanting to walk on a golf course, you find out the reason why they have golf carts in the first place. They'll charge you for a cart fee, and at the same time, you know, allow you to walk, carry your own bag. So it's all, you know, the income source. And unfortunately, we're bleeding the golfer to death. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to go out and speak to the starter with your bag over your shoulder and go out and play? And he says, wait a minute, we've got a couple of foursomes going through, but right after that you can do it. Instead of all the rest of the fluff that's surrounded by parking your car in a valet parking spot or getting some valet to park it, getting your clubs down, taken away, and put into a golf cart, talking to the starter to tell you which tees you have to play, checking that your GPS system is working, making sure that the cart girl is going to be around in a certain spot, and then going through this whole process. I mean, we've taken an awful lot away from the game of golf with all of this fluff. And I think it's had a detrimental effect on the game. And we're never going to go back to the little golf course that I played up in the Isle of Seal, where there wasn't an attendant. You put your £10 in an envelope and put it in an honesty box. And somebody pulled the money out to buy some gasoline to mow the greens once a week. And it was only 9 holes. And it was one of the most wonderful, exhilarating experiences I've had. And you play your 9 holes, and you play it again. And the only important thing is, to you, as far as your score is concerned, is how it compared to yesterday or the first time you played it in the morning. And that's what we need to do and experience now and again. And I hope that most golfers or most even administrators or operators have an opportunity to do something like that, just to know where the bottom line is and understand what the basics of the game are. And I think, in essence, I'm trying very hard to get golfers to relate to the basics of the game and also to mobilize them into helping grow the game and allowing more people to enjoy this wonderful experience that we have.
Well, I would love to continue, but it sounds like the battery on your microphone is dying out. The book is called Just Hit It, Our Equipment and Our Game by Frank Thomas with Jeff Newman. And if you are interested in purchasing the book, we do have it available on our Smarter Shopping section of the GolfSmarterPodcast.com website. Just click on Smarter Shopping, go into the book section about golf, and you will find the book Just Hit It, again, by Frank Thomas. Now, Frank, before you go and before your batteries die completely, you do have the great line of custom putters that you make called the Frankly Frog Putter. I want to know, can we give one away?
Absolutely. And you select the person, and it'll be a wonderful gift for them.
Absolutely, and I'm a big fan of my Frankly Frog Putter. Now, if you'd like to enter to win, we'll let this go on for 3 weeks to a month here. So enter to win, of course, by going to golfsmarterpodcast.com. Click on the word contest and make sure you select the Frankly Frog Putter, and you will have an opportunity to win the putter of your choice. There's many options on the website at franklygolf.com or franklyfrog.com. Either one, and you'll get all that information. Of course, if you'd like to purchase a putter, Frank wouldn't mind that at all, but we're also going to give one away. Frank Thomas, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation, and we appreciate you coming over to Golf Smarter. We've had you on Golf Better a couple times, and we love having you over there too, but this is a different conversation, and I really appreciate you spending the time.
Fred, it was absolutely my pleasure, and I just hope that we can do something for this wonderful game of ours.
And isn't that what it's all about? Frank, thanks so much again. It's quite an honor to have you on the show. So now you can go to golfsmarter.com and click on the contest button so that you can register for your chance to win a Frankly Frog Putter. I love mine. Deadline for entries is May 30th, 2008, and we'll announce the winner on the episode of June 3rd. It's been a while, but our latest episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf is entirely dedicated to your questions. It's a full half hour of Ask Kenny on Golf Better. Please subscribe on iTunes or check it out at golfbetterpodcast.com. Now, I have to admit, there was a slight glitch in our coding of the podcast last week, and it seems to have been resolved. Some of you tried to download Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf and got episodes of Golf Smarter Tips. My bad. It's all done now, though. If you do find that you have the problem in iTunes, here's what you need to do. Go to the downloaded podcast section. Okay, there's a section on the left side of iTunes that says podcast. Not in the iTunes store, but in iTunes, it says podcasts. And then when you go into that section, on the bottom right corner, there's a button that says refresh. Click on refresh, and everything should correct itself. You may still get a couple episodes of Golf Smarter Tips, but hey, it's free, and we want you to listen to anyway. But you'll also get the newest episode of Ask Kenny. And of course, even though Kenny Nicholson is exclusively on Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, Golf Smarter listeners are still eligible to take advantage of the 10% discount and free shipping for your purchases. And of course, in an effort to keep a tab on how the podcast is working for them, they've changed the code that you must enter to get the discount. And to hear the latest code, please listen to that Ask Kenny episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. Since this is the first week of May, we close this week's episode with a birthday wish to Bing Crosby, born on May 3rd, 1903. Crosby was an avid golfer and the first real multimedia star. Now, from 1934 to 1954, Bing Crosby held a nearly unrivaled command of record sales, radio ratings, and motion picture grosses. So if you were to compare that to what the Beatles were to the 60s, Elvis was to the 50s, or even Sinatra back in the 40s, Crosby was their American idol. Bing was a major influence in the emergence of the pro-am tournaments that paired pro golfers with celebrities. Now, of course, today's AT&T at Pebble Beach started out as the Crosby Clam Bake all the way back in 1937. I want you to check out the photograph that we posted on the Golf Smarter blog of Bing sorting out golf balls for the scrap rubber drive during the war effort of 1942. Ah, but that's not why we mention him today. Oh, no. We honor Bing Crosby because in 1947, he invested $50,000 in the Ampex company, which later developed the world's first reel-to-reel tape recorder. And it's because of that investment and his love of golf that you are the recipient of today's Golf Smarter podcast. If you have any comments, questions, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop, whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
Sometimes diabetics will test and they'll still be at 100 saying, I'm not going low, what are you talking about? And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm, he lies down quietly, he's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.